Hi, this is Ray Lager, Underwriting Director here at KZFR. If you're a local business or nonprofit and would like to reach our listeners about your products or services, consider becoming an underwriter on KZFR. Your message will be read live, and we'll also link your website to ours, list you on our program guide. If you're interested, contact me at underwrite@kzfr.org or call me at 520-4742, and we can put KZFR to work for you. That's underwrite@kzfr.org or by calling 520-4742. Keep it live and local at 90.1 KZFR.
Non-Human Radio is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Om Foods, serving organic, non-GMO whole foods, including wild-caught mahi-mahi, and having the largest vegan menu in downtown Chico. Om Foods serves homemade teas and lemonades, acai bowls, and smoothies blended with coconut water, and they're located at 142 Broadway, just two blocks from Chico State. They're open Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. and on Saturday from 11 to 3 with to-go and catering available. For more info, go to iloveomfoods.com or find them on Facebook. And we're also made possible by Peterson Tree Care, because trees need care. John Peterson continues his family tradition of caring for Chico's amazing natural resource. Licensed, bonded, and insured with financing available, Peterson Tree Care handles residential and commercial properties and can be reached by calling 518-0924. This is KZFR 90.1 FM in Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Up next, Non-Human Radio. Good afternoon and welcome to show 1924, the June 12th, 2019 episode of Non-Human Radio, where we talk animal rights and veganism every Wednesday from 5:30 to 6 p.m. here on KZFR 90.1 FM in Chico and streaming online at kzfr.org. What do we have going on today, Danny?
On today's show, we'll be discussing a few current news stories, starting with the good news that Canada has banned whale and dolphin captivity. We'll move on to cover a sad reversal on longline fishing in the Pacific Ocean. And, again, news of more horse deaths at Santa Anita Racetrack. We'll end with news of a comprehensive undercover investigation at a so-called humane dairy in the Midwest with ties to Chick-fil-A. I don't even know how to say it. I don't either.
Chick-fil-A.
Coca-Cola and our local supermarkets. Jeannie, what do you say?
Thanks, Danny. Well, with good news, we'll start out with some good news. Whales and dolphins can no longer be bred or kept in captivity under new legislation that was passed in Canada on Monday. The legislation, dubbed the Free Willy Bill by its proponents, marks a new era in animal rights law. For the first time, Canadians can be found guilty for possession of marine mammals, not just for poor treatment. That's pretty significant, right? It's the difference between animal welfare and verging into animal rights.
I mean, treatment has got a lot of wiggle room. Possession is clear cut.
But, yes. Barbara Cartwright, who is the CEO of Humane Canada, an animal welfare group, said the bill is a watershed moment for Canadians who, she said, are visiting institutions that host captive whales and dolphins far less than in the past. The bill began its journey through the legislative process back in 2015 when it was presented as a private member's bill in the Canadian Senate. At the time, Senator Wilfred Moore, the original sponsor, said the bill was the result of encouragement from his son after the two of them watched Blackfish, a documentary about captive killer whales. The Blackfish effect continues,
yeah,
right?
I mean, if you think these documentaries don't have any effect, here you go.
Mr. Moore told Canada's Globe and Mail newspaper that his son said, "Dad, can you do something about that?" And Mr. Moore told his son that he would try, and try he did. The bill includes a grandfather clause that will allow marine institutions to keep mammals that were born or conceived before the legislation was passed. Currently, Marineland in Niagara Falls, Ontario, and the Vancouver Aquarium are the only institutions in Canada that host cetaceans, which is, of course, the scientific name for whales, dolphins, and porpoises. The bill also prohibits the import and export of marine mammals in Canada, except for scientific research or for the, quote, best interest of the mammal. There's your wiggle room, right? The best interest of the mammal.
Yeah.
And, of course, scientific research is the umbrella under which a lot of current modern-day whale hunting is conducted. Marineland said in a statement that the bill affirms that having cetaceans living in Marineland doesn't amount to cruelty. So they say, right?
What?
Yeah, because they were grandfathered in. The Vancouver Aquarium last year announced its commitment to divesting itself of its marine mammals. At a press conference after the bill's passing, Camille Lapchuk, who is the executive director of Animal Justice, which is another animal advocacy organization, said that there needs to be a discussion about what best interest means. Ms. Lapchuk also said that Marineland and the Vancouver Aquarium must seek additional permits for any mammals that haven't been shipped already, despite pre-existing permits. Ms. Cartwright said that she hopes that any cetaceans that remain in captivity under the grandfather clause are eventually sent to sanctuaries. Three other pieces of legislation currently before the Parliament deal with the treatment of animals. They deal with banning shark fin imports, sexual assault and all forms of animal fighting, and cosmetic testing on animals. So that is good news. Congratulations to all the animal advocates that made that happen. As a side note, countries and cities around the world that already have banned the confinement of some or all cetaceans in tanks include Mexico, France, South Carolina. South Carolina's progressive. Woo! And California. In 2016, the nonprofit organization the Whale Sanctuary Project announced plans to build the first seaside sanctuary for retired captive whales and dolphins in Nova Scotia. And that is, we've talked about the whale sanctuary before. They're expecting, a small group of beluga whales from China there.
Cool.
So that'll be nice. All right. You've been listening to Animal News on Non-Human Radio on KZFR 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio hosted by Jeannie Trezino and Danny Toms. If you want to follow more current events and animal rights-related news, I invite you to follow a Non-Human Radio Facebook page. Over to you, Danny.
In breaking news, the Center for Biological Diversity and Turtle Island Restoration Network, I think those are two things, right?
Yes.
I read it as one, sued the Trump administration yesterday for permitting a new longline fishery in the Pacific Ocean. The fishery, authorized in May 2019 by the National Marine Fisheries Service, would operate off the coast of California despite a federal ban on longline gear created in 2004 to protect sea turtles. Longline stretch up to 60 miles with 1,000 hooks intended to catch swordfish and tuna. This longline netting will threaten endangered weatherback sea turtles, loggerhead sea turtles, and as well as Guadalupe fur seals. I mean, it's just, it's unfathomable. Imagine a 60-mile, you know, fox trap going through Lassen Forest. Like, nobody would stand for something that massive and dangerous, but it's kind of like, oh, it's out. It's just floating around. Nobody quite knows that's how fishing works.
So it's 99 miles from Chico to the Sacramento airport.
Yeah.
So we're talking about a fishing line that goes basically from here to maybe a little past Yuba City, 1,000 of those hooks.
Yeah. And they break. And not to mention all the damage they do. It's just, it's horrible. I don't think. Catherine Kilduff, a Center for Biological Diversity senior attorney, told World and not a longline hook. Californians demand more selective and sustainable fishing for swordfish, but the industry drown endangered species off our coast. According to the Turtle Island Restoration 18 years ago, and the same agency is using a backdoor maneuver to get the fishery reopened. Hawaii longline fleet has been closed for turtle take, meaning they're killing too many turtles. It makes no sense to reauthorize this wasteful fishery off of California. Sea turtles become hooked while trying to take longline bait or become entangled while swimming through the walls of nearly invisible lines and hooks that can drown the turtles or leave them fatally injured. Sea birdles, such as the Laysan and black-footed albatross, also dive for the bait and become hooked. Worldwide, longline fishing has caused precipitous declines in most albatross populations. Pacific leatherback sea turtles are highly endangered, with scientists predicting their extinction in 20 years. Yet the, quote, exempted fishery will occur in an area that includes the Pacific leatherback conservation area, which prohibits swordfish fishing using drift gill nets to protect leatherback sea turtles. The California Coastal Commission requested approval to review the proposed permit to determine whether it was consistent with the California Coastal Management Program, but the Trump administration denied the request. Despite being likely to catch sea turtles and Guadalupe fur seals, imperiled animals protected by state and federal law, the Trump administration found the fishery would not affect California's coastal resources.
It's just remarkable. We've talked about the issue of like states' rights and how that's used to justify various hunting policies, in this case to justify, in this case, California Coastal Commission wants to assert a state's right to regulate this fishery, and the feds are rolling over it. The feds under the guise of Trump are rolling over it.
Yeah, I mean, and he's already stated how he wants to just basically punish California. So either this is just a win-win for him. Somebody is trying to make a few bucks off of this, and he gets to stick it to California. But yeah, it's just, there's other words I don't want to say on the radio. Last week's lawsuit about this, filed in the U.S. District Court for the Northern District of California, notes that the Fisheries Service issuance of the permit violated several environmental laws, including the Endangered Species Act and National Environmental Policy Act. The suit seeks to invalidate the permit protecting the turtles and seals from longlines. And that was a June 11th article from the World Animal News
Fresh
website.
The
only thing I want to say, when they say, you know, whenever you hear the Trump administration found that we could do this, that doesn't mean there's any science. That means a guy signed a piece of paper and said, I don't think it'll happen. Because there is no longer accountability.
And in this case, it sounded like there was some, you know, this had attempted to be passed before. So like, hey, we have this plan. You rejected it 15 years ago.
Yeah.
Let's trot it out again. It's all ready. We dotted all the I's and crossed all the T's.
All right. Another story from me. This week... What is this story here, Jeannie?
This is the horse, about racetracks, please.
It's about Santa Anita racetracks. So this week, California Senator Dianne Feinstein joined those calling for the suspension of racing at Santa Anita after the track suffered two more horse deaths over the weekend. The fatalities increased the total deaths to 29 since December 26th when the track opened its current meeting, as they call it. Feinstein's call for closure comes after the California Horse Racing Board also asked for the track to close for the remainder of the season, just 6 days. The track denied the request and plans to stay open. So, I mean, here, like, the only rule here is profit. You know, everybody is saying you should close. The racing association says you should close. And they're like, we'll stay open. Which also kind of shows you how much money they're getting, that they can afford the bad publicity, the bad press, the horses dying.
It's just astonishing. We're talking about a racetrack in Southern California on some very valuable real estate. At this point, building houses on that would make way more money than the betting industry.
Yeah. Feinstein told the LA Times that, quote, Santa Anita should have suspended racing in March after 23 horses died over a three-month stretch to open the season. Now that six more horses have died in just 23 days, with 29 total deaths this season, the track should suspend racing immediately. Feinstein went on to say, this isn't an isolated year for Santa Anita. During the 2017-18 season, 44 horses died. During the 16-17 season, 64 horses died. And during the 2015-16 season, 62 horses died. That's 199 dead horses at one track in four racing seasons. Something is seriously wrong. Whether it's the track itself or problems with training and medication, no one seems to know, yet training and racing continues, end quote, and dying continues. And, like, again, people, you know, we have to be conscious consumers. We have to think about what we support. You know, Kentucky Derby looks great as a television show. And, of course, they never show the horses that are getting put down when they break their leg on TV. And that happens almost every race.
There's that. And many a retired racehorse ends up in a horse auction for food.
It's just there's nothing good about it the way it's done now anyway. Several months from now, it's possible the California Horse Racing Board would have the authority to immediately suspend a license or move races. California Legislative Bill SB 469 would allow the board to enact emergency measures and, after a vote, call for a track's temporary closure. Currently, the board must first go through a 10-day public notice period, publish an agenda and any supplemental material. I guess in this case, it's only got 6 more days to stay open, so it doesn't work this year. The board published its agenda Monday for the meeting it will have on June 20th in Northern California. There was no item listed on the closing of Santa Anita.
So they weren't even putting it on the agenda.
Yeah. When the board asked Santa Anita to close, it suggested the track remain open for training. If training were not available to the near 2,000 horses at Santa Anita, who cannot, of course, be left in their stalls every day without exercise, there would be a crisis. Del Mar, which is the next major long-term circuit for horses in Southern California, will not have its track available for training until July 11th. Del Mar is owned by the state, which holds other events at the fairgrounds.
The whole fairground thing in the state of California is so interesting. Mm. I mean, a lot of the public fairgrounds in California are all owned by the state.
And a lot of public grounds seem to be sold out to private enterprises to make profit on, and the public can't actually go to them. Santa Anita, along with the Thoroughbred Owners of California and the California Thoroughbred Trainers, issued a statement saying in part, "After extensive consultation among all partners, Santa Anita will stay open through the end of its meet to see these reforms through." Okay, what reforms here? The track was referring to medication and protocol changes that are in effect at Santa Anita and meant to change public perception about the sport.
That's working real well.
Yeah. The most controversial was the decision to eventually eliminate the use of Lasix, which is used to treat exercise-induced pulmonary hemorrhaging or bleeding from the lungs on race days. Medical experts show no correlation between Lasix and breakdowns. However, the U.S. is one of the few countries that allow Lasix on race days. Lasix is related to rat poison. It's a blood thinner that was given to my father when he was suffering from congestive heart failure. And they're allowed to just, you know, shoot horses up with this on race day because
exactly.
They'll race a little better. It's unfathomable. So this was a June 10th Los Angeles Times article written by John Chirwa.
Thanks, Danny. That appeared in the sports section, so it's not a front page item anymore. I guess we're at the end of the race season, so maybe it's not going to come up on the front page. And I hope that the next update we have on this is something major. But we shall
closing,
see.
Yeah.
All right. Our last news piece is about a recent undercover investigation by the group Animal Recovery Mission, or ARM. ARM is a Florida-based animal rights group that uses direct action tactics to investigate, document, and expose illegal activities of animal cruelty, especially in the food animal industry. The group recently exposed horrific, widespread, and long-term abuse on a dairy farm that supplies Fairlife Milk, which is one of the largest, quote, humane label milk companies in the United States. You can find this stuff at Safeway. This Fair Oaks Farms Fairlife Dairy is one of several dairies belonging to Select Milk Producers, Inc., which is also the producer of the Fairlife label. In 2012, the Coca-Cola Company created a joint venture with Select Milk in order to distribute Fairlife Milk products. In 2015, Fairlife entered into an exclusive partnership with Chick-fil-A to create their Greek yogurt parfait. Coca-Cola also began to distribute Fairlife Milk, another brand called Core Power, and another brand called Yup Milk in that same year.
And they're not using Fair Life, ironically, here or anything, right?
No. They definitely want to, let consumers know that their milk is the way they produce their milk is humane.
Mm.
Fair Oaks, which is headquartered in Fair Oaks, Indiana, and the Fair Life Corporation, which is headquartered in Chicago, Illinois, have created brands based on promoting the proper and humane care of the cows from whom their products are sourced. However, the treatment and welfare of these animals are absent. The cows are removed from their holding barns 3 times a day to be milked day and night. On a daily basis, employees were observed hitting and punching cows and using the milking claws to hit cows in the udders. Cows were also poked, stabbed, and shoved with metal tubes and broomsticks. When cows in the milking line would not cooperate, frustrated employees can be seen bending and breaking bones in the cows' tails as a punishment for them not entering the rotary milking system. When dairy cows no longer produced milk or if they were too sick, workers told the ARM investigator, who's an undercover person, that those dairy cows would be sent to McDonald's or for Big Macs or to become dog food. Public response to the investigation has been overwhelming, with the story making headlines around the globe and retailers pulling Fairlife milk from their shelves left and right. Numerous protests across the country have been staged at both Fairlife and Coca-Cola headquarters, as well as at Fair Oaks Farms, the dystopian factory farm theme park in Indiana that owns the dairy farm in question. I kid you not. It's you can drive. They send school kids there. It's a dairy where they separate the calves from their moms within hours, or if not immediately after birth, and this is where school kids are brought. This is where, on your summer road trip, you can stop into Fair Oaks, Indiana, and see how your milk is made. Yeah. It's unbelievable. Although Fair Oaks Farms and Fairlife Milk deserve every second of the monumental infamy and bad press that they are now experiencing, it is important to realize that this is not an isolated incident of one bad apple in this industry. So don't you say, not my milk.
Mm-hmm.
The abuse at Fairlife Milk's supplier is unconscionable, but the truth is, there can be no such thing as a fair life on any dairy farm ever. It is crucial to recognize that our violence towards animals begins with a value judgment. In the case of industrial dairy farming and the routine abuses inflicted on cows and their calves, which consumers and producers of so-called ethical dairy claim to oppose, including separation of calves from their mothers, dehorning, confinement of cows in barren industrial sheds, and confinement of calves in isolated hutches, all these harms derive from a value judgment. The first value judgment says that animals used for dairy are so devoid of existential worth, the inherent value of a life independent of its usefulness to others, that they do not deserve to be free and autonomous, but rather deserve only to exist as property to be exploited, even when exploiting them is completely unnecessary to our survival and health. The second value judgment at the heart of dairy farming entails that animals' mothering relationships are so inherently inferior and undeserving of respect that it is morally acceptable to breed individuals into existence in order to force them to become mothers so that we, human adults, may needlessly invade their mothering relationships in order to consume, commodify, and profit from their stolen maternal lactations, literally baby food made for baby animals.
Yeah.
All forms of dairy farming endorse this violently entitled mentality. All forms. And all the worst abuses of so-called factory dairy farms like Fair Oaks derive from this original violence. The attitude that says animal lives are so inferior that they can be designated as property and that their mothering relationships are not theirs, but ours to exploit at our whim. As long as people believe it's morally acceptable to own, invade, and commodify the reproductive systems and mothering of other animals, then abuses like the ones at Fair Oaks Farms will always occur. Because if the lives and mothering relationships of animals don't even matter enough for us to refrain from exploiting them when we have no need to, then on what grounds can their suffering possibly be said to matter? So-called humane dairy labels, as much as their founders and proponents may try to distinguish them from commercial dairy farming, actually entrench and perpetuate industrial dairy farm abuse by practicing the single most important factor necessary for factory dairies to flourish. That is, the mindset that says another's motherhood is a thing we can own and exploit. That judgment is the first and worst violence against these animals from which all the others unavoidably spring. And that was a editorial news piece from the Free From Harm website written by Ashley Capps. I thought she did a really nice job of saying, you know, we can see this, we can say Fairlife is really a bad actor, a bad apple, but that violence, that separation of the calf from its mother is baked into this system.
Yeah, I mean, so much of this is just people don't want to think more than one step beyond what they're responsible for. So this whole set of articles horse racing, people betting on horse racing, watching it on TV. Well, they're not the one killing the horses. They're not the ones racing them into the ground. They don't see that happening. That's an oddity, you know, the miles and miles of hooks floating around the ocean. Well, I only eat organic fish.
Method?
You know, I don't know. That's probably not where my fish came from. I'm sure it was somewhere else, you know.
It must be.
You know, this dairy. Oh, well, I know my dairy farmer. I know these guys. Certainly they don't do it. I mean, there's no herd of baby male calves on any farm hanging out, you know. Like, they're in veal crates or they're dead.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting, too. I was reading it's a 135-page report that ARM has put out for their undercover investigation. They had an undercover investigator there for a few months. Among other things, the investigator was not specifically targeting Fairlife Farms.
Mm-hmm.
He had been put into a labor pool and got assigned to Fairlife Farms, and that's where he did his undercover work. Other interesting things were, there's a 24-hour video of the milking parlor. So all this cruelty that he observed and documented with his own video camera, his cell phone, was obvious and visible to mm-hmm. the management.
Yeah.
So there's no excuse. They did a good job of capturing the website for Fairlife Milk before they started amending or taking down pages. Mm-hmm. And there's like statements, this statement: "We know that nothing is as important to us as the health and well-being of our animals. Our world revolves around making sure our cows are fed well, treated humanely, and live in comfortable, stress-free conditions." Like, this is what you want to believe?
Right.
And it's there on their website. It's a perfectly beautiful, professional-looking website. You have no reason to really question it until you're like, how do we get so much milk?
Any industry driven by profit, volume, and speed is based on some form of cruelty, whoever's at the bottom.
Yeah.
You know?
So be aware. You can make better choices. Please make better choices.
All right. Now it's time for the Chico Vegan Animal Rights Calendar events. Get out your calendars. What's going on around town, Jeannie?
All right, we've got a couple of things going on. Not too much. There's not going to be a Chico Vegan Potluck this month, but the Chico Peace and Justice Center is looking for volunteers to join its money committee. This committee helps the Peace and Justice Center by planning fundraisers and thanking donors and more. For more information, call 530-893-9078 or go to chicopeace.org. Coming up on June 15th, that's this Saturday, Animal Place is hosting its first Pride event on Saturday, June 15th from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. The Animal Place Pride Potluck is dedicated to celebrating our compassionate and resilient community. The event is open to LGBTQ+ vegans, allies, and the veg curious. Join them for a rainbow-themed vegan potluck, games, and a talk on the intersections between LGBTQ rights and animal rights. And, of course, there's sharing time with the animals. For tickets and more information, go to the animalplace.org website, and pre-registration is required. And just a heads up, the last Sunday pop-up series is beginning at Blackbird Cafe. Tacos and Mexican fare, all vegan, will be offered on Sunday, June 30th from 11 a.m. until they sell out. And that'll be hosted by Blackbird Cafe and Tacos Borrego.
That's exciting.
Yeah, so for more information, go to the Blackbird Chico Facebook page. All right, and that is it.
So you might say that's the first last Sunday pop-up.
It is. You were just waiting to say that, weren't you?
No, I was.
Very clever, very clever. And that's it for the calendar. If you have an event to share, please send me an email at chicovegan@gmail.com. And we have one last piece of business to take care of to close out today's show, and that's the Animal Rights Quote of the Week. Take it away, Danny.
Today's Animal Rights Quote of the Week is from Margaret Renkel's recent op-ed in the New York Times. Let's hear it for the average child. To the student who fled to the restroom on dissection day and took a zero in biology lab, it's a great gift to love animals. When you can sit quietly in the presence of another creature, when you can earn a fearful animal's trust, you are participating in the eons. Whatever it may seem to be almost everyone else, this planet is a great, great breathing, vulnerable beast, and we are each of us only one of its cells. We celebrate the tender heart that has taught you this truth, so urgent and so easily overlooked. Life is not a contest, and the world is not an arena. just by being here, unique among all others,